Today's stories determines tomorrow's success. So this Black History Month, we are memorializing four Black entrepreneurial stories in collaboration with Black-owned Hamilton. They have a plethora of services that allows Black entrepreneurs to quiet the noise so they can listen to their own voices. Black-owned has a community platform where business owners can access funding, courses, events, different unique opportunities, as well as mental health services and resources, so that you as a Black entrepreneur can thrive both in your business and personally. Welcome back to Buzzworthy. I'm your host, Shalicia Harris. And today in the studio, we have Max Francis, the founder of True Hamiltonian. Max is... What he said to me behind the scenes, really, is he is going to try everything at least once.
At least once.
And he's got stories to prove it. Because in just getting started and setting up these cameras, Max told me a whole lot of things that I was very shocked about, including him being an actor.
Yes.
Which, you know, I'm not surprised. You're so charismatic. You're so easy. You feel like... You're a character on its own, but you transform into other characters too. Like, how did this
acting happen? First of all, that's my acting. I actually don't transform into other characters. Mm. What I do is I believe in life experience.
Yeah.
So I feel like every character you play at some point in your life, you might have been through a situation like that. Mm-hmm. So you just have to go back in your memory, what you felt at that time, how you felt, how you reacted to it, and just bring that to it.
That's right.
So it's just me in that situation.
You know, that's a really good strategy, yeah. Not only for acting, but I think in business and just your personal life, because I know a lot of people talk about not being comfortable in certain rooms.
Yeah.
They walk in, and I think I have a very, you know, unconventional thought about what imposter syndrome is, and yeah. I think it's exactly that. I think when I walk into a room, I must belong in there for some reason. So I truly don't think I've ever walked into a room that made me think, why am I in here? I don't belong in here. I feel uncomfortable. I yeah. feel less than. It's because there's something about the situation that you're in, I've been in before, or I'm excited to be in now
yeah.
because I wanted it at some point in time.
Yeah.
So why must I feel smaller than the circumstances that I'm in right now, and just own it and be excited about it, because I wished about it at one point.
Yeah.
I dreamt about it at one point.
Yes.
And now that it's actually happening, why am I scared about it?
Exactly.
So I think that strategy of just like looking inward to yourself and finding those moments that matter brings you into a situation and allows you to be the best version of yourself in that situation and for that situation.
Yes. Yeah. I was lucky. I've never actually had to deal with imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. Well, I did, but not before, after. Mm-hmm. I've done some really cool things. And then afterwards, I was like, Jesus, I'm not sure if I should have been there. But I grew up in a really hyper confident family.
Mm.
And it's the kind of family, they had no reason to be as confident as they were, but they just were. So I grew up in an environment where it was just like, just go 100%, and all you can do is, whether you win or lose, it's the same net zero, whatever.
Yeah.
So if you didn't do it, or if you didn't fail, you're still at the exact same place. So yeah. I was never afraid to fail, because I'm like, ah.
This is such a theme for this month, yeah. And I am here for it.
Okay.
Not afraid to fail.
Yeah.
And I love that, you know, people underestimate the impact their families have on them.
Yeah.
And then when you have your own family, then the impact you have on your own kids as well.
Yes.
And you having a family that was just confident and that exuded it.
Exuded ultra confidence, man. Like, I remember I had this uncle.
Yeah.
And he did construction. And my parents would pay him to like drop us off to school, pick us up, stuff like that. And he would show up in ripped, dirty shirts and ripped, dirty jeans and shoes that were falling apart and his hair's not combed. And he'd come pick us up and he'd see one of our teachers and he'd be like, "Hey, baby, come talk to me." And I'm like, "Dude, look at you. Why would you even talk to her looking the way you're looking?" He goes, "Let me let you in on a secret. If they don't like you when you're dirty, they won't like you when you're clean."
You know what? There is something true to that.
It's very true.
Yeah.
But and it took me, when I got older, to realize what he meant by that. Mm-hmm. Like, if they only saw you for your clothes and your jewelry or your car, they're not liking you. They like what you can provide for them. I get what he's saying now, but at the time I was like, "Oh, God."
First impressions matter.
It does.
That's a really good story. And hindsight's always 20/20.
Like, right? I said, ultra confident family, man. They had no fear.
They were just grounded and just like being human.
Yeah.
I think that creates a level of confidence because I recently did this on my LinkedIn and you know, everyone has this like title on their LinkedIn about like who they are, what company they work for, words that describe them.
Yeah.
I recently updated it, I believe in like October, November of last year. And I just put human first.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons I put that is because at the end of the day, that is truly who we all are.
Yeah.
We are just human first. And what that means to me is I'm going to make mistakes. I'm going to fail at some point. I'm going to feel embarrassed at some point. But everybody has experienced all of those things.
Yeah.
And none of those things are going to stop me from moving forward in any way, shape, or form. And I see like such a real humanness in your family in that way.
When you were talking about imposter syndrome, when I experienced that the most is when I have to do bios. Because you were talking about doing bio. When I have to put down all the stuff I've done, after a while, I'm like, "Man, you sound like an a-hole." Like, this sounds preposterous, but it's literally stuff I've done. But then when you list it all out, you're like, "Man, like, people are going to read this and be like, man, this guy's full of himself."
No, it's just, it's, you know, it's your accolades, it's the things you accomplish, but those things are still, those are part of you and they're not who you are.
Okay.
And I think people use their bios to be like, "This is who I am," versus just the things I've simply accomplished.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that's the differentiator between the two.
Nice.
So yeah. So no, I think you're good. And I mean, everyone's entitled to their own feelings. I do think people, truly experience imposter syndrome, but I think it's hard for me to relate to sometimes, and it's just simply how I organize my internal world and how I experience things. So I'm not negating anyone's experience, but it's just a different perspective.
The only time I've really kind of thought about that is I remember being on a set and I'm shooting this movie and there was a kid I was pretending to be his dad, and the kid had a photographic memory. Mm-hmm. So he would look at the lines once, and he had it, and I'm sitting there like, "Rrr, rrr." I'm like, "Maybe I shouldn't be doing this."
Yeah. That would make you feel inferior for sure. You're just like, "How's this little kid doing this?" But they don't have half the things you have in your brain. So.
But then I think adults also have photographic memory. So some adult with a photographic memory looks at the sheet once, they've got it. And I'm sitting there like over and over and over and over, just trying to get it to stick.
Yeah. It's, I totally understand that. That can make you feel like, wow, you know, look how much work I have to put in. Am I really meant to do this?
Yes.
Yeah. Questioning.
That's when you question yourself.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, like, something brought you in there.
Yeah.
And if that's the only thing you hold on to, just hold on to it.
Hold on to it, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, we started right into this. Not usually how this plays out. But I was just very curious. in terms of how acting even came about for you.
Okay, so I was working for an engineering company in a lab, and I worked four 10-hour days. So I had a 10-hour shift 4 days, and I'd have a three-day weekend every weekend. So I had all this free time, and I would go out with my buddies drinking and hanging out, and I'm like, you know what? This is not productive. So then I was like, you know what I'm going to do? Because I loved running. I'm going to enter a 5 or 10K race every weekend so that I spent the entire week training. And then that Saturday or Sunday, I would have a race. I'd be exhausted and then start the whole process all over again. So it kept me busy, kept me productive. And I entered the Around the Bay race here in Hamilton. And I went to pick up my race kit. And there was some agency set up in the lobby. And they were like, oh, we're looking for athletic-looking people for an upcoming campaign. And the girl pulled me aside and she's like, oh, would you be interested in interviewing? I'm like, no, this is a scam. I was being negative, which I shouldn't be, but I was at the time. And I was like, you guys want me to pay $1,000 for pictures and then I'll never hear from you. And then Sarah, who I was with at the time, she's like, you're being very negative. She goes, just call them. You never know what's going to happen. So I ended up calling them that Monday. I got an interview with them like 2 days later, and I went in, and then a week later I was on my first set doing a commercial. So you never know what'll happen when you say yes.
Yeah, and this all happened in your year of yes.
Yes. Yes.
So what led you to that point of your year of yes?
I think what happened is, I don't remember whether it was a movie or a book I read or something, and the character in that movie or book or whatever did a year of yes, and I just remember thinking, you know what? I want to try that. Mm-hmm. I think it would be really cool to see what would happen if you actually said yes to stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what came out of that? Acting?
Oh, man, so much stuff. I think my year of yes led to acting. It led to speaking engagements. It led to being invited to events I had no business being at. It led to all kinds of really, really meeting really cool people. And yeah, it was just an amazing year. It was exhausting, but it was amazing. Yeah. A lot of fun. Yeah.
So, you know, all of this that we've learned about you so far is so very interesting. And you are also an entrepreneur.
Yes.
As well. So obviously, that's why you're on this podcast. But one of the first questions I usually ask the guests is, what do you think set you up to be an entrepreneur? And what, and for you more specifically, what do you think really set you up to just be so open to all of these different experiences and taking the risk in doing them?
I think what set me up to be an entrepreneur are my parents. They were both business owners. So it's something I've been around my entire life.
Okay.
And I always thought at some point I would start my own business, but I never knew what it would be. Like, I had no idea, like, what to start. And I think I stumbled into what became my business. It was never supposed to be a business. It was just something that I wanted for myself and that something I really enjoyed. And other people started enjoying it too. And I kind of wanted to just share it. And then it exploded. And it reached a point where I was like, well, I guess I'm doing this now.
Yeah.
And I've been doing it. This is year number 12.
Of True Hamiltonian.
Yes. Our 12-year anniversary.
That's amazing. So when is the 12-year exactly?
March. March is March. Officially our 12-year.
Wow. So in just a few weeks.
Yeah.
Very, very exciting. So let's go back to like the early days of True Hamiltonian.
Okay.
And how it really morphed into this business. Because you said this wasn't supposed to be a business.
No, I was working full time. I had a great job, benefits, the whole nine yards. I remember I would go to all of the festivals or concerts in Hamilton, and they would always have someone selling some kind of Hamilton merch. And I would always buy whatever Hamilton merch I saw because I loved this community. And I remember thinking, I love these shirts, but they don't say what I want them to say. It doesn't really reflect how I feel about this community. Mm-hmm. So I made a shirt that said, I heart Hamilton. And I started wearing that. And a buddy of mine is like, dude, that's a ripoff of I heart New York. I'm like, yeah. So he goes, you're a smart guy. He goes, if you want to wear something to show your pride in this community, come up with your own saying. I'm like, you know what? You're right. So I sat down at work doing this on company time. Sorry, guys. And I came up with like 8 slogans that I really liked. And I turned them all into T-shirts, 8 different T-shirts. And I started wearing a different shirt every day. And one of the shirts said, Hamilton is home. And every single time I wore that shirt, someone would stop me and say, where can I get that shirt? I said, oh, no, I made it. And then they'd be like, can you make me one? And me at the time, not understanding business or any of that, I'm just excited. I'm like, yeah, give me your name and number. I'll make you. What size do you need? I'll make you one. So I started making shirts and giving them to people. And I think I was probably into about $500 worth of shirts I'd given away. And Sarah, my partner at the time, said, you can't keep giving these shirts away. you're not giving away any more shirts. I was like, okay, I'll start selling them. Mm-hmm. So then I started selling them for $20. And I had a lot of friends that were bartenders or waitresses or bouncers, like all over the city. So they would see other people wearing the shirt and they'd call me and be like, Max, are you the one making these shirts? I'm like, yeah. They go, I'm working tonight at this bar. Can you drop one off for me? Mm-hmm. I'd be like, yeah, sure. No problem. So I'd make the shirt in the size they wanted. I'd go to the dollar store, get a nice little brown paper bag, put it in the paper bag, thinking I'm being like a professional. I walk in the bar. I hand them a brown paper bag. They hand me cash and I'm walking out. People are running out behind me. You got any more drugs? I'm like, I'm not a drug dealer. And they're like, I'm not a cop. I go, I'm still not a drug dealer. But I can see how that looks. I'm handing a bartender a brown bag and she's handing me cash. Guys, I was giving them T-shirts. It's all.
That was it. It was just T-shirt. But there's so much about that story I really love. It's because, one, I think when something is so important to you and you just have to figure it out,
yeah,
you figure it out no matter where you are, even though you're at somebody else's job. Every entrepreneur is a little bit guilty of that, yeah, yes. Right? And at that time, you didn't even know it was, you know.
No, I had no clue. It was not supposed to be a business. Mm-hmm. And even when it became a business, a part-time business, what I was doing was I would work my day shift and people would call or text me like, I need this size, whatever. I would come home and I would put all the shirts and bags. And from like 5 p.m. till like midnight, I would be going out and delivering these shirts by hand to all these people that called me saying they wanted a shirt. So you can only imagine some of these people, 11:30 at night, some big black guys knocking on your door.
Oh, my God.
Is Sarah here? What do you want with my wife? No, I'm just delivering a shirt, I swear.
That is, you know... You can't help but laugh about
it. Oh, dude, it was so funny. The other thing I realized is everyone has a dog. There was always a dog barking at me.
The things you do for your business. You get mistaken as a drug dealer. You get mistaken as someone trying to steal someone's wife. The dogs are trying to get you, but you're still pushing through.
Still pushing through, yeah.
Oh my goodness, that's so funny. And I'm sure, like, you know, we're experiencing one of the coldest days of the year right now.
Yeah.
You've had to deliver
in snow, rain, you name it.
You were there.
You know what it was? I was so excited that people wanted something that I created that it didn't feel like work. It just felt like... one more person walking around wearing that shirt was just like, yes. I just remember we have Supercrawl here in Hamilton.
Yes.
And I was going with my daughter and I used to always carry her on my neck. Like she'd always be up on my neck. And we were waiting to cross the street and there was a guy on the other side wearing one of my shirts. And she goes, Dad, I go, I know, I see it. She goes, are you going to say something? I go, yeah. I said, do you think I should? She goes, yeah. I was like, okay. So we're crossing the street and we pass him in the middle of the street. And I go, hey, nice shirt. And the guy looked at me with Natalie. He's like, yeah, I know. And we get to the other side. And my daughter goes to me. She goes, he has no idea, does he? I was like, nope.
Wow. If you know who you are, identify yourself and send an apology to True Hamilton. Thank you. That is, and what you have so many stories.
Oh, so many.
So many stories, Max. When you look back on this, I know it's, you know, we can laugh about it in here and now, but I think, you know, this is Black History Month that we're doing this episode about. And I think a lot of Black people are scared sometimes to do what they want to do because you get mistaken as these different things, even if it's just a very innocent thing in certain scenarios. And you get stereotyped a lot. Like, how did you like get over that? Did you just use laughter?
No, actually, that was a major part of my journey. When I started the company, first of all, no one knew it was my company. Like, other than my close friends, nobody knew. And Hamilton, the Black population of Hamilton is, I believe, 7%. I actually looked it up. And I was like, man, if I'm marketing to Black people, I'm going to be out of business like very quickly. So I remember thinking, okay, you know what? We're going to guerrilla market this. So I had a bunch of friends that were like bartenders or bikers or bouncers. So I got them all to wear the shirt and I took pics of them. And I would only post those pics. I never posted any pics of me. Mm-hmm. So people are seeing all these cool guys and cool girls wearing the shirt. And they're like, oh, yeah, I want that shirt. And for the longest time, I never posted any pics of me or that it was my company or anything. And I think I was probably 4 or 5 years in, and a buddy of mine, Kyle Skinner, big shout out to Kyle. He's like, dude, like, you need a story. You need to be, your story needs to be attached to your brand. And I was like, no. I like the way things are going right now. He goes, you need a story. Your story is important to, like, blowing the brand up. And he kept, like, hammering me with this. And finally, I was doing a photo shoot with him because he's also a photographer. And he included me in the shoot, and I did not want to be in the shoot. And we launched the photos, and it blew up. Like, people embraced it, and they were really happy with it, and it did really well. But for the longest time, I honestly wasn't sure if the Hamilton community was ready for a Black guy to say Hamilton is home. I wasn't sure if that was going to, like resonate.
Yeah.
So I was just like, nope, not me.
Yeah.
I'll be the guy behind the scenes.
And not the face of it.
Not the face of it, yeah.
So Kyle really helped you sort of step into this. And once you actually did, what was the response?
The response was overwhelming. I started getting companies reaching out to me, organizations. They loved what I had done, what we were doing. They wanted to know what they could do to help or how we could work together. And it led to way bigger things than I ever imagined we would end up doing. So, it was a crucial step in the evolution of the company. But I also feel like I did it at the right time. I feel like if I did it at the very beginning, it might have not worked. Mm-hmm. But we had done all this groundwork. We had built the brand from, like, nothing to, like, something where people were seeing these shirts everywhere. So I think we had done enough legwork without being like, hey, look, it's me. that it really became this brand where people are like, oh, it's our brand, not his brand.
Mm. So. And that's when you know you have a really successful brand.
Yeah.
Right? There's even a show, and this is just from a brand perspective, making that connection, that is called The Brands That Build America.
Yeah.
It's a show about all the big brands that we see now, Kraft, Coca-Cola, all of these companies that started as, you know, one person in a kitchen doing something, and it's blossomed into these like Fortune 500 companies.
Yeah.
And they still dominate the world today. Yeah. And they started just like this.
Yeah. I remember I had a meeting with a gentleman who was doing brand marketing for like the city and for McMaster and all this stuff. And he's like, I wouldn't be surprised within a year or two if some big company comes and buys you up. And I'm like, huh, that's interesting. I never even thought of that. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is obviously growing the brand or getting bigger. And everyone's like, oh, you should get a loan and just like blow the brand up. And I'm like, I'm not even sure how to do that. Like, this is not something I'm from a background where my parents, like, they were in retail or had their own businesses, but it was just whatever money you made, that's the money you had to, like, you don't go to
reinvest
the bank and borrow money. That's not a thing, you know, not the Black community I grew up in anyway. So it's whatever money you made, that's the money you had to, like, do what you needed to do.
We have a giveaway from the Hamilton Chamber of Commerce, who is the voice of the Hamilton business community. As part of the Black History Month story series, they're giving away 1 year membership to the Chamber of Commerce, along with $1,000 in advertising credit. All you have to do is follow the Chamber, follow Buzzworthy Podcast, and follow Black Owned Hamilton. We will do the rest, and we will see you on Friday, February 27th for the final draw. Stay tuned. How did you feel about, you know, after you finally took the risk to become part of the face of the company to say, hey, I'm the person behind all of this that you've seen?
How did I feel after that?
Yeah.
Terrified, to tell you the truth. At first I was like, I messed everything up. This is about to blow up. Like, it, not in a blow up in a good way, blow up in a bad way.
Implode.
I better call my old job and see if they have my position still available. Actually, funny story about that. When I left the company to pursue True Hamiltonian full time, I remember them telling me that I would be back within a year begging for my job back. And I love those guys and everything. But guys, it's been 12 years. I don't think I'm coming back.
Max needs another apology. You know what? I think it's the stories like this that I think are so important for people to hear. And it's one of the reasons, you know, we started this podcast, is because people take risks that other people are so against, right? And, you know, typically we cover, like, you know, people that are building these new innovative softwares and things like that. But your story, I think, is even more important because you quit to do something where, you know, people are just like, you're going to be a guy selling t-shirts.
Yep. My family and friends, they all staged an intervention. They were all trying to stop me.
Wow.
Yeah. They all called me. They all talked to me for hours. Don't do it. Don't quit your day job. Just do it on the side. Like, it can be your side hustle, but do not quit your day job. That was their position. Do not quit your day job.
Yeah.
So they all tried to stage an intervention, and I listened to everything they all had to say, and then I did it.
Says every entrepreneur.
What's that old saying? Shit or get off the pot?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's the risk you're taking, right?
I did.
Yeah. Nothing scared you in doing this?
I wasn't scared of doing it. I was scared of how I would look if it failed. I was terrified that I would be considered the idiot that quit his job and, like, was out of business within 6 months. Mm-hmm. So I remember my first lease on a building. I got this great deal on the spot, and all I wanted to do was, like, not fail. So I didn't want to sign The guy's like, you want to sign a 4 or 5 year lease? I'm like, no, no. Can we do a 1 year lease? He's like, no, no. The minimum we'll do is 2 years. I was like, okay. And I was like, frick, man, what if I don't make it for 2 years? Like, I'll still owe this guy all this money. Like, I'm terrified. I'm like pooping my pants. And then the first 2 years flew by and the rent like went through the roof. I was like, frick, I should have started a 5 year lease. But you don't know, right?
So yeah, you don't know. You can only make a decision today for what you have in your hand.
Yes.
And you can't beat yourself up for it after that.
No. But our first store was haunted, so thank God I didn't sign that 5 year lease.
What?
Yeah, it was super haunted. The one on Ottawa Street, that building is haunted. Sorry, guys. Now you know.
We don't know where that is.
I know you have questions. Feel free. I'll lay it out for you.
I'll ask all the haunted questions behind the scenes, and then I'll tell our guests about it.
Okay.
Because, side note, the city of Hamilton does want some good messaging.
Okay. No. It's not a bad thing for the city of Hamilton. Yeah. There are haunted buildings everywhere, all around the world. Yeah. And it doesn't necessarily mean ghosts. It just means negative energy within a structure.
Yeah, true. That sounds very scary. I personally would like to know what building it is for next episode. So I can stay clear. Okay. So it's been 12 years.
Yes.
And you've been through a lot. You've been through jumping out of a full-time job.
Yes.
And the safety and security of that.
Yes.
Taking a risk.
Yes.
On being that guy that might run back to that same full-time job 6 months later, but you are here 12 years later.
Yes. And also the C word that we don't talk about anymore.
What's that?
COVID.
Oh, COVID. Yeah, because you're a brick and mortar.
Yeah.
You're brick. How did you survive that?
I did not. When COVID hit, we had 3 locations and we ended up closing all 3.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was fully digital. I went fully online for about a year. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what made you come back in person?
You know what? Honestly, I didn't even want to come back into a brick and mortar. I thought, okay, I'll just stay digital. Mm-hmm. And we did a fashion show, not last year, the year before at Supercrawl. Mm-hmm. And it went really well. And we were getting a lot of exposure. We were getting a lot of partnership interest. We're just getting a lot of traffic. And I thought, you know what, if we are going to go back to a store, this would be the time to do it. And we found a location that worked. We weren't even looking for a location. I went for coffee with a buddy, and we passed this location with a sign in the window and ended up calling the landlord, who I ended up knowing. And it was almost like everything was like meant to be. It all worked out perfectly. And I was just like, all right, guess we're doing this.
Yeah.
So it worked out really well. Brick and mortars are tricky, man. Like, you have to constantly drive traffic to that location. And that means you have to find some way to advertise, whether it's through social media, whether it's through word of mouth, whether it's through paid advertising. You have to constantly. It's not that people don't want to support you or they don't want to come to your store. They have a lot going on. People have, like, you have work and family stuff and kids and someone's sick in the hospital. Like, there's so much happening. You're not thinking about coming into a brick and mortar. So it has to constantly be flashing in front of your face. And you're like, oh, it's my aunt's birthday. I'll go get her a sweater. Or, oh, it's Valentine's Day. Maybe I'll get my wife or, like, you have to constantly bombard people, and it can be almost exhausting just constantly hitting people over the head. Hey, we're here. And there are companies in Hamilton that are amazing at it. Like, but once again, I have that thing where I don't even like making videos of myself telling people to come to the store, because I'm like, people probably are seeing these videos and they're like, man, this freaking guy again. Jesus Christ, go away.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm sick of seeing me.
That's what you have to do, because One of the, you know, you told me about the marketing strategy overall you use. And I think the mindset behind that is so brilliant because, I mean, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay.
Tell us about it.
I will tell the world my secret it's not secret, but my marketing strategy.
Yeah.
So my philosophy is that everyone lives in their bubble. Okay. So say you are a husband and you work at Ford. You go to work every morning. You come home. Your wife's a teacher at a local school. She comes home. You guys have two kids. One kid's playing soccer. One kid's playing baseball. So you're rushing off, get home, have dinner, get everyone ready for bed. And then you do that cycle all over again. You're not looking for a new clothing company or a new chocolate company. You're so busy just trying to make it through the day that's your bubble. Like everything that happens to you happens within that bubble, whether it's the other parents you talk to or teachers or whatever. So my strategy for us has always been to insert ourselves into those bubbles. Mm-hmm. So whether it's doing a partnership with the local soccer team or doing shirts for the local school or if Ford's doing some kind of event where all the workers get a Hamilton is Steel shirt or something, we get ourselves into the bubbles. And then when that person comes home with the shirt, then the rest of the family's, oh, where'd you get that? And now you're in their bubble.
Yeah.
Now they're talking to their friends or their other parents. Hey, did you see that shirt? Like, I didn't even know that company was there. You'd be surprised how many people see a Hamilton is Home shirt and be like, oh, that company started 3 years ago. That was the first time I saw it. We didn't start 3 years ago. That was just the first time it inserted itself into your bubble.
100%. Yeah. The first time it inserted itself into my bubble was only about 4 years ago. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, cool. And I don't remember who gave me this shirt, but somebody gave me this shirt. I want to say I was at some entrepreneurial event. Yeah. And again, that is my bubble.
Yes.
All of the different entrepreneurial networking events happening in the city. And I think I was at an event that wasn't even in Hamilton when I got this shirt.
See?
But I was at this networking event and I saw it and I was just like, I want a shirt. And they gave it to me and I was just like, wow, this is cool. So I thought it was just something that this company did.
See?
And they came up with the slogan. And so I was like, cool, I'll have one of your shirts.
No, it's one of our partnerships where we'll do shirts for corporations or organizations.
Which is brilliant.
Yeah.
Because organizations, what they do, they get these shirts, they put their logos on it,
and then they end up
at Value Village or thrift stores. And
hey, someone paid for it at some point.
Again. But these shirts, people, like I kept it.
Yeah.
I have another one, actually, I think I have two, this one and another one that has, I think, City of Hamilton stuff on it. Yeah.
When I first started, this is a little secret that I used to do. I would go to all the thrift stores, and if I found one of my shirts or something, I would buy it to make sure it wasn't on the racks. But then I'm too big now to do that. I'm like, I can't afford to go out and buy 1,000 shirts.
No.
But at the time, you'd see one or two every once in a while, and I'd go out and get them and just make sure they're not on the racks there.
That is smart. That is smart. That is protecting your brand equity. Everything you gave us in that little package is like really fundamentals of marketing. I don't even think when I left school, because I went to school, I have a degree in marketing. I don't even think they really explained those basics of marketing in the way you explain it as a bubble.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, and that's why sometimes people feel overly bombarded on social media, is because their targeting is so off.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're trying to, you know, if you're in a park blowing bubbles with kids, you can't possibly reach all the bubbles before they pop.
No.
Right? So you have to be specific about which bubble you're going to target. And you're like, that's the bubble I'm going to insert myself into.
Yeah.
And naturally, it's going to spread to all these other bubbles and be really strategic about it.
As a parent, my focus has always been to be a family-friendly brand.
Mm-hmm.
That's always been my number one thing. So none of our gear has ever said anything that would be taken offensively or mm-hmm. out of context. And there were many times I wanted to make shirts that said blank this or blank that. I just never did.
Yeah.
And it's so funny when you get people sending you pictures and it's like their little kids wearing it, the parents wearing it. This, I remember we did Hamilton is Home in 15 different languages because we wanted to like show support for all the different communities mm-hmm. within Hamilton. And this girl sent me a picture of her Nona, her Italian grandfather.
Yeah.
And he was in his garden with his Hamilton is Home in Italian t-shirt doing his garden. She goes, he won't take that shirt off. And it was the most heartwarming picture I had ever seen in my life. It was just because he felt included. Like,
yeah.
And that's always been my big thing. If any one sentence describes me, it's inclusion, not exclusion. That's it.
Yeah. I can see it.
Yeah.
I've experienced it.
Yeah.
I've only met you a few, you know, hours ago. Only really this week. And I can definitely say that's very true of my experience so far with you.
Yeah. And by the way, this podcast is me inserting myself into your bubbles.
So get yourself a Hamilton is Home shirt.
We have other gear. It's not just, I'm actually wearing one of our jackets
yeah.
right now and one of our sweaters. So I will hook you up.
Yeah. And we're going to do a giveaway.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Amazing.
I think one of the things that people get wrong about the brand is they think we're just selling t-shirts. It's the message. We're delivering the message. The t-shirt or the glasses or the coffee cup, it's a vehicle to deliver the message. But the message is that Hamilton is home to you if that's how you feel inside. Like, if you don't like Hamilton and you don't want to be here, this shirt will never resonate with you. But there are people that they get here or they're born here and they're just like, there's nowhere else I'd rather be. And that's when it resonates with you. And that's when the message hits home.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Absolutely. One of the things is, you know, Hamilton is Home is obviously a very strong brand for the city that yeah. we're in, the city we live in. But what was it about doing business here in this city that made you such a success and that makes you want to stay here?
I think I have a genuine love for this community, and I had it before I ever started the company. You know how Facebook memories come up?
Yeah.
I have a Facebook memory from like 20 years ago, and it was a Friday night, and I was getting ready to go out with my boys. And I just remember I posted on Facebook, another Friday night in the greatest city this side of heaven. And that was my Facebook
caption.
Post 20 years ago before any of this. So I think you have to have a genuine love for something before you can turn it into anything else. Because
mm-hmm.
if you're faking it, people are going to know right away. Like,
oh, it's so easy.
Yeah.
So easy to spot a
yeah.
fraudulent.
Trust me, there's been a lot of other companies selling Hamilton shirts in and out within 5 years. So.
Wow. This has been such an energetic conversation. I'm so grateful to have like met you
okay.
and have you come into the studio and share like all of your wonderful stories and like your mindset as well.
Okay.
And I think that's what makes such a fantastic entrepreneur
yeah.
is the mindset that you have is going to get you over every hurdle that you have.
I will say for all the entrepreneurs out here, because everyone thinks that they're the only ones going through rough times. So they wake up and they're like, don't want to get out of bed because the bills are all due and you didn't make enough money that week. We all go through that, all of us. Mm-hmm. The difference is when you get up in the morning, you have to decide. It's like flipping a coin. Am I going to be the positive energy that I put out into the world today? Or am I going to be that black hole that sucks up everyone else's energy? So it's a conscious choice, and you have to make that every morning when you get up. And believe me, it's going to affect everything that happens to you that day.
Yeah.
So.
That is 100% true.
Yeah.
100. When you decide it's going to be a bad day, everything bad is going to happen.
Everything.
Yeah. And in a lot of, you know, just the stories you tell, you know, I feel like there's a lot of serendipity in entrepreneurship as well. And a lot of that, I think, follows courage,
yes,
which is, you know, just having the faith that the next step you take is going to get you closer to where you ultimately want to be.
You also can't be afraid to fail. One of my favorite sayings is, don't be afraid of rock bottom because there's nowhere else to go but up. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to fail, fail big. Just go all out, baby. Go all out.
And what other way to sort of wrap us up and take us into our last couple sections other than go big?
Go big or go home.
Or go home. So what we usually do on this podcast, okay, Max, is we have three questions that we ask all of our entrepreneurs in the end.
Yeah.
As kind of a sum up of the past, what we're taking away from it, and what we want into the future.
Okay.
So what is one thing that you are leaving behind in your entrepreneurial journey?
One thing that I'm leaving behind?
Mm-hmm. This does not serve you anymore. It does not serve your business. Something that you're just like, I just want to give this up now.
The one thing I think I would give up is pride. Don't be afraid to ask for help. Mm. Leave your pride at the door. Never be afraid to ask for help. You never know who's out there cheering you on and rooting for you. And in the right situation at the right time, they might have an opportunity for you that you never even thought of. And just because you guys had that conversation, they're like, well, I have a friend who's looking for this and your company does this. I should connect you to. Like, don't be prideful. Don't think because you've done well to this point that you can never ask for help. Always be humble and be like, hey, guys, like, you know what? If you know anyone that's looking for my services or whatever, please send them my way.
Yeah. Ask for it. One of our other guests said something I think that's used quite frequently, especially within the Black community, is like, closed mouths don't get fed.
Yes.
So, yeah, absolutely. I think pride is huge. I'm working on it.
it's all of us. We all want to be like,
yeah,
you want to be known as the person that did well and you're doing well and mm-hmm. And you don't want anyone to see you stumble or like fall. So you kind of like hold it all in. And that kind of becomes toxic in a way. So
yeah,
you just have to be like, hey, listen, you know what? It's been a rough week or month or whatever. And I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So what's the biggest thing you've learned so far?
From being an entrepreneur?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Oof. Biggest thing I've learned from being an entrepreneur. Huh, that's a damn good question. I think the biggest thing I've learned from an entrepreneur is that people think you're making way more money than you're actually making.
Facts.
Oh, man, after you pay rent and insurance and taxes and employees and hydro and phone and internet and every other bill that's due, you're like, okay, I got just enough to get a cheeseburger.
Yeah. And I forgot which celebrity actually said it. It might actually have been Kim Kardashian. And we don't really talk about celebrities here. And I know Kim Kardashian's people love to hate her.
Yeah.
But one of the things she said in an interview a very long time ago, and it really stuck with me, is that she said people don't understand the pressure that, you know, her or entrepreneurs like ourselves are under when we are no longer just responsible for feeding our families.
Yes.
We are responsible for feeding the families of all the people that work for us.
Yes.
So if we stop doing everything we're doing, it's not just us. And then at the end of the day, we have to go to sleep with it.
Yeah.
So it's that level of pressure, you know? Like there are other entrepreneurs that talk about, you know, them... most entrepreneurs always pay their employees before
yes.
they pay themselves.
Yeah.
And
you know, the funny thing something. About that is the employees don't even realize that. They don't realize you're not pulling a paycheck. They just think like, oh, well, he owes me this. Like, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm going to pay you. But like, mm-hmm. you have to realize, like, I'm paying you before I'm paying myself. Like,
yeah.
So I think one of the hardest things for me was during COVID when we did have to close those three stores. We had to let a lot of employees go, and some of them were very upset. And I'm like, dude, like, I have no money to pay you. What do you want me to do? Like, like, stores are closed for 2 years. I have no money. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard because, like you said, they just see you as you're rich.
Yeah.
You own this business, so yes, you must have cash.
And you have money hidden away.
Yes. Somewhere in Switzerland.
Oh, my God. The funniest story I ever heard was I was at an event, and I was with a friend of mine, and mm-hmm. she had gone to talk to other people in the room, and she had come back, and she said, one of the guys said that I must be a drug dealer because there's no way I'm making a living selling T-shirts.
Here it comes back.
So apparently it's a front for something else. I'm like, God, I wish it was. I wish I had barrels of money buried somewhere. I wish this was Breaking Bad.
I'm just, you know, Walter White.
Oh, my God.
In black.
What I wouldn't give for a barrel of money in my backyard right now.
Yeah. And, you know, those are some of the things we have to contend as, yeah, you know. And, you know, one of the things you've done, you know, quite gracefully is laugh through a lot of these stereotypes.
Oh, absolutely.
That you experience. But a lot of people aren't able to do that. And I think that's why it's important to, you know, to have these very candid conversations. Yes, you can laugh about it. Yeah. And let it roll off your sleeve. But the impact of that on a lot of people can be
negative,
quite negative as well.
I can't take anything to heart like that because I realized a long time ago those negative emotions or words or feelings, it is like the black hole. And once you get to the edge of that black hole and you start spiraling in, it's so hard to get out of it. Mm-hmm. So I won't allow myself to get caught up into the negative turmoil that pulls you down. So I'd rather laugh my way past it than get embroiled in it. So that's just my way of dealing with things. I'm not saying it's the healthiest way, but I just refuse to go down that negative black hole spiral.
Yeah. Amazing. And our final question is, what's one thing you're taking into the future with you?
One thing I'm taking into the future. all right. So as everyone knows, retail's tough right now. Like, the economy's crap. The price of everything has gone through the roof. And I honestly thought about, you know what? We did 10 solid years, 11 solid years, 12 solid years of this. Maybe it's time to close up shop, go back to school, learn a trade, and like, go in a different direction. Mm-hmm. And I have a friend of mine, Nat, and I had had this conversation with her, and she worked in a bar. Mm-hmm. And she said that the amount of people that she talks to every day that are so excited to move to this community or be a part of this community, or they went away to school and they got back, and the amount of people that tell her that they can't wait to own their first Hamilton This Home shirt. And she goes, you can't quit. She goes, there are so many people that are counting on you. And that really like hit my heart. I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
So if you guys are counting on me, come buy a shirt.
I'm kidding. No. For real. We will have all of your information in the description, links to your website. Yeah. Everything, because, you know, this podcast is actually global, and quite surprisingly, we have a huge listenership in Singapore.
Oh, wow.
And maybe, like, through all of our stories so far.
Actually, can I say one last thing?
Yeah.
Did you know there are 127 cities around the world named Hamilton?
No.
Yeah, that's one of the first researches, because I was thinking on how to expand the brand. Mm-hmm. That would be a cool way to expand a brand without changing anything.
Yeah.
So if you live in one of those 126 other cities, reach out. I'd love to work with you.
That would be so cool.
Right?
Yeah, please reach out. The only Hamilton that I know of that's not in Canada or the U.S. is New Zealand. Yes. Hamilton, New Zealand is a big one.
Yeah.
But I don't know anywhere else. But 127.
There's a Hamilton Island in Australia, and they have the biggest yacht races in the world there. That's one I would like to go to. If you have a yacht on Hamilton Island, reach out.
This is literally Max Praxison leaving pride behind because he's asking and I'm not mad about it. This has been phenomenal, Max.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is cool.
This is very great. This is very great. Stay tuned for our next episode next week.